Our gospel this morning is from the 13th chapter of St. Matthew. Jesus put before them, the crowds, the disciples who had gathered, but put before them another parable. He said, "The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that someone took and sowed in his field. It is the smallest of all the seeds, but when it has grown, it's the greatest of shrubs and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and make nests in its branches." Then he told them another parable. "The kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed in with three measures of flour until all of it was leavened." Jesus told the crowds all of these things in parables. Without a parable, he told them nothing. Then he spoke yet another. "The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which someone found and hid. Then in his joy he goes and he sells all that he has and he buys that field. And again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls. On finding one pearl of great value, he went and sold all that he had, and he bought it." This is the gospel of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You may be seated. It is good to be with you this morning. I feel like sort of a guest today, having been away for a little while, although not all that long. But it's good to be with you this morning. As you may have heard, we have spent the last couple of weeks with a number of our high school youth on a mission trip to Guatemala. And so, if you don't mind, some of these thoughts and reflections will come from that trip. After all, our flight yesterday from Guatemala was delayed by about 3.5 hours in Miami because of what must have been severe storms here in Charlotte, or at least in the Charlotte area. A minor inconvenience, I must admit, that gave us at least a chance to look through pictures and swap highlights of a journey and to write this sermon. So I hope you don't mind. But I'd like to spend this sermon time offering some reflection on a journey that these youth took, a journey certainly geographically but also spiritually, a spiritual journey to visit Escuela Integrada, our partner school in Antigua, Guatemala, the colonial capital of the Spanish colonial capital after the Spaniards had conquered that Mayan region and empire in Central America in the 1500s. Guatemala is a place that is rich in history, rich in color, rich in smells, and rich in, believe it or not, diversity. 43 of us went on 2 different trips, 1 week apiece, and I must commend Kai, our youth minister, for pulling together what was a remarkable journey, and our thanks to him and the other adults who helped to lead the way. Lives changed, I must admit. Many lives changed. We encountered treasures, after all. In a field that Christ gave his life for. We encountered people the world seems to have left in an ugly oyster bed. We encountered flour in need of yeast. We encountered mustard seeds. I don't know if you know of mustard seeds, but I don't know, 1,000 I could hold in the palm of my hand, but it only takes just one for God to use to produce a tree of great worth, the branches of which birds of every kind will flock. We spent 2 weeks with 165 kids in a world of 7.5 billion people. We didn't build churches. We didn't build homes. We didn't build clinics. That wasn't our mission. We built relationships with kids like Felipe and Jonathan and Norma and Josue and Dahlia and Luden, with selfless teachers like Francisco and Minor and Alejandro and Belsi. If God's greatest desire for us is to build healthy, loving relationships, then I'm here to say, well done, students from St. John's. I can think of no finer example of living in God's grace and in God's purpose than what you were a part of these last 2 weeks. So, well done. Years ago, Mennonite theologian John Howard Yoder said, "In a world that is consumed and measured by success and consumption, Christians must be reminded over and over again that we are called not to be successful. We are called to be faithful." And so I want to thank these students and adults for being faithful these last few weeks. But before your heads get too big, those of you who might be here, I see Spencer in the back. And many of them probably are not here, let's be honest. I mean, those at least from this past week got in late last night and I hope maybe are still sleeping at this point. But nevertheless, before their heads get too big, I do want to remind them and all of us really what these last few weeks have taught us about faithfulness, that we're faithful when we love God, and we're faithful when we love the other. Scripture talks to us over and over again about the other and how we are to look through lenses that have the other in mind, right? The other is the one that we are called to love, which means, after all, boys and girls, men and women around the world and in our own backyard, who we claim as brothers and sisters in Christ because God has claimed them as his precious sons and daughters, treasures in a field, pearls of great worth. I see Haley too, right? Haley, is that correct? I think that's true. As our plane lifted off the runway in Guatemala, I couldn't help thinking of the kids and the families that we left behind. How easy it is for us to fly in and out. How easy it is for us to just sort of touch down for a few days, loving every minute of the adventure, but knowing that we can return to our own conveniences, like brushing my teeth in my own sink and not having to rinse out with other water. I thought of Walter as we lifted off yesterday. A 13-year-old kid whose life is as hard as any I've ever encountered. I mean, he's the kid who drops off his shoes shining box when he arrives at school each morning, knowing that after school each day he's going to need to walk 2 miles or so to the center of Antigua and shine shoes until the crowd sort of disappear. Sometimes that's at dark. Sometimes it's 5 or 6 o'clock. But it also includes the weekends. Anna and I encountered him one morning, 8 o'clock in the morning. At Sunday morning, I do believe he was on his way. Once again, he spends Saturdays and Sundays theirs too, again, until dark. He has no day off. He has no holiday whatsoever. The money he makes is money that they will use to buy the family meal that night. Francisco was his teacher last year and quickly became his inspiration because, you see, when he was a kid, Francisco also shined shoes every single day. Francisco is unique because he's now a teacher at the school, but Francisco grew up at the school. He was invited to be a student at Escuela Integrada, and so we see him as a great success and what that little bit of hope can give to these kids. Francisco was like Walter, a shoe shiner in the market every day. I know, he said, I know how hard it is. He told us. My family was never able to celebrate my birthday, he said. I never had a day off, never. On festivals and holidays when the crowds were big, when crowds were enormous and came from all over, we slept in the park sometimes for days on end. I know what Walter is going through, he said. Francis told us that Walter is a bright kid, full of energy, full of creativity, but there's no time in his life and his schedule to study whatsoever, except when he walks through the door of the school that morning until he leaves that afternoon. Otherwise, his life is consumed by work and by the stress and strain of just surviving. Nevertheless, Francisco wanted Walter on the school soccer team, not because of his skill, but because he needed the escape. And somehow they managed to work it out. I don't know how. And so Walter joined a group of 15 or 16 boys decked out in light blue jerseys that were supplied by a church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Boys who have never played in organized soccer leagues, much less on full-size manicured grass fields. They played wherever they could find. Sometimes that was just a dirt sort of mound somewhere in their vicinity or maybe in the streets. It's not that they weren't good soccer players, they sure were, just not maybe in the way we might encounter it. That team of hidden treasures, that team of shoe shiners, that team of boys who sleep in beds with 2 or 3 other siblings each night, that team of boys in homes without, many of them, toilet facilities, whose moms make tortillas and whose dads have long since disappeared, unfortunately, last month. These boys made it all the way to the city soccer championship in a game, and I'm not making this up, in a game against the city's most elite Catholic boys' school, and won. These champions. Walter took his shoe shining kit to the game that day because he had some work to do when it was all over. Rest assured, he worked with a smile on his face that day. A champion. Francisco sums it all up. We give these kids hope and a life that seems so hopeless. As it turns out, it only takes a teacher, that's all. It only takes a school, that's all. And it only takes a church, that's all. A church, a school, a teacher who believes in them to make it happen. Or to use the words of Jesus' parable, just like a little bit of yeast, that's all. Just a little bit that's mixed into flour and it will rise. We know that it will, right? We're guaranteed, it's a promise to us. It will rise. Just a little bit of hope mixed into these kids. They will rise. For some reason, I thought a lot about bread in Guatemala. It's interesting because across the street from our hotel was a little bakery, and you could smell early in the morning the fresh bread. It was a lovely, beautiful smell, but it struck me that as on all the home visits that we took and the meals that we had at the school, we were never served bread and never saw bread in the home, only corn tortillas, flat tortillas that I'm sure you've seen, always made of corn, rarely of flour. Corn, because it's a staple crop, there's so much that's available. But it's interesting that there's not bread in these poor homes, it seems, and I don't know why, quite honestly. The wonderful smell, the large, luscious loaves, it would seem to be a bit more substantive, perhaps. I have no idea, but it yet seems to be another example of the contrasts in Guatemala. Rich, poor, tortilla, fresh-baked bread. In Guatemala, the highest GDP in all of Central America, and yet also the largest disparity. Antigua is a fascinating town and a town of great contrast, a beautiful colonial city, but in which live desperately poor people. There are no stoplights in Antigua that we could see, only stop signs. Really, stop, comma, if you want to, right? In Antigua, where there are guards at every door, at every business, at the banks and schools, wherever, where bikes on roads and maybe even highways, too, that have no lights or reflectors, of course, families that ride to school and wherever they need to go, full families of four on scooters, there are 12-inch sidewalks that protect you, really, from sure death if you were to step off sometimes those sidewalks. Families living on active volcanoes at the base of those volcanoes. Why? Because land is cheap there, but only there. You see, in a land where 85% of the wealth are owned by 5% of the people mostly living in Guatemala City, they have to find something that's cheap. Like Alejandro's family. Alejandro is a beautiful girl. I mean, really, just a lovely, beautiful girl. Beautiful in the way she looked and her clothing and whatever. We followed Alejandro home on a home visit one day, and I must admit I was surprised. We had been in a number of homes, and some of which were desperately poor, but hers may have been the worst. I mean, she lived with a family of seven, in a room that couldn't have been more than, say, 9 by 12, 8 by 10, whatever, I don't know, but three beds crammed into that room, and that is it. Now, there was a broken-down stove right outside of their door into the room, a stove that they tried to use to make whatever they needed to bake. And I looked at Alejandro and wondered, how do you do it? How do you survive? And yet, I'm reminded of this promise, just a little bit of yeast and friends, it will rise. Or Luis, a kid that we've had the privilege of sponsoring for the last 3 years, but who we've never laid eyes on until this week, really. He lives in a family of 10, a dad who probably is not present, a man who was there on the home visit, but we think maybe was the father of the youngest child. We're not quite sure, but Luis is sort of in a house with a mom who sells packaged items from a cart in a park, and that's essentially the source of their income. Luis is raised more by his older sister Pamela, who's in seventh grade, than by anyone else or any other adult in the home. Luis, who was last year sexually abused by two men in that park. Luis, who this past year has had to spend his time maybe not so much working hard in school, but sitting with a counselor to try to figure out the horrors of that kind of abuse. I'm reminded of a little bit of yeast added to flour. It will rise. excuse me. Or even of Rudy, 17 years old. Rudy's tall, handsome, strong. Always wanted to be a veterinarian. And at his house, he had animals all around, ducklings, chickens, more dogs than he probably should have, but all well cared for. And Rudy always wanted to be a veterinarian, or at least in a job, a vocation where he could work with animals. That was his heart's desire. He was doing well in school, quite honestly, but last year his father lost his leg to diabetes, and his mom, as a result, lost her job because she had to care for her husband. And in a country where you can only get health insurance if you have a job, as a result, they lost everything. And so Rudy had to help care for his dad, and his dad could only really move around in their kitchen area because that was the only flat area of their home because they lived on that active volcano, and so he couldn't even hardly leave the home, and Rudy had to care for his father. He didn't have a wheelchair. He really had Rudy. And so Rudy last year failed in school, and yet Rudy has one more chance. This is his last chance. He has one more year to make it, and he has to make up essentially 2 years of academic study in these next 6 months in order to pass so that he might take the next step in education. That's the rule in Guatemala, and yet he's doing really well. A little bit of yeast, friends, in flour, and it will rise. Treasures in a field. Pearls of great value. One final word, if you don't mind. On Friday afternoon, less than 48 hours ago, it seems, Anna and I had the chance to say our final goodbyes to this school. Anna and I had the privilege of spending the last 2 weeks there, and the other kids on the journey went on a hike up a volcano, which is a remarkable hike. And so glad that we were able to do that last week, but since we did last week, of course, then Anna and I stayed home on Friday. So in going around to the different classes, we slipped into the various classrooms. We asked an interpreter to come with us. And in the seventh grade classroom, which is a particularly special class, 20 kids, many of whom were Anna's age, their age ranges from 13 to 16 because of just the different context in that area. The teacher welcomed us in, and we said a few words of goodbye, of adios, you know, with the very limited vocabulary that we have. And then all of a sudden, it seemed, the students themselves began to stand almost one by one and offer their own words of goodbye. I admit it was a very personal moment, but it was very meaningful. The girl standing beside Anna was so overcome that she was in tears. She couldn't speak anymore. The interpreter herself was in tears, had to leave the room. I was in tears, and so they just hugged Anna. And the picture that I took, which was a snapshot image for me, I'm sure, of our whole trip, Anna's there in the middle of all of these kids. Jonathan is to her left, perhaps her favorite student of all. Pamela, Luis's older sister, is to her right. Luden, who's the kid who has two dogs, pets, who really are pets, the best cared pets or dogs I've seen in all of Guatemala. He's right behind her with a bright smile on his face. And it struck me that these are no longer just students from a school 1,000 miles away, but friends, dear friends, the kingdom of heaven is like that. When brothers and sisters join together as one, as amigos, we were given a glimpse of that kingdom these past 2 weeks. And even though we're unlikely to see these seventh grade kids on this earth again, I believe in the beautiful promise of God's eternal kingdom. When there will be, and where there will be, no extremes, only joy. When we will, with those boys and girls, those brothers and sisters, when we will be able to join hands once again with them and sing and dance until the morning light. You know, closing the door of the school one last time, as Anna and I were leaving, 5-year-old Felipe ran from his class and hugged us both simply to say, adios, amigos, which for me is a beautiful, glorious glimpse of the kingdom of God.